Hello, everyone. Welcome to the ZU podcast. It's me, Kelly, the editor. I'm back as a host, and today I have a very, very special guest with me. He's been mentioned in almost every podcast, but he hasn't actually been in one. He is the Twitch director and financial director for ZU. Everybody, welcome Elias Thompson. Yay!
Hello. I resent the remark that I have not been on the podcast before, because I have been in roundtable discussions. This is my first time hosting, because Kelly made me. So hello.
Alrighty. Well, Elias, are you so excited to host with me?
I'm so excited to finally be able to host this podcast with one of my favorite people.
Aww.
And you.
Oh!
I was trying to think of someone to say, but there's literally no one around in my apartment or in the call, so I couldn't think of anything. But yes, I'm excited to host this podcast with you.
All right, this is how this podcast is going to go. I see how it is. All right, well, for the lineup, we've got a really cool show going. We've got Shona. She's going to talk about Redeads and how they relate to Zelda games.
And then we have Randy with his Hyrule Away from Hyrule Zelda-like likes, where he talks about Zelda-like games and makes a lot of like-like puns.
And then we also have the community news with the All-Stars, Anne, and Realm.
And then after that, ladies and gentlemen and people of all ages, we have the Ilia Deathmatch, which is a segment title, by the way, in all capital letters, featuring myself and Amanda Van Hyl going at the Grand Ilia debate, good or bad, with moderator D. Alex Rosenberg. You guys are not going to want to miss this, because I'm in it.
After the debate, we have everybody's favorite segment, the credits.
Not everyone's. I prefer segments that I'm in instead of credits.
True, but I like doing the credits because it's a really easy thing to edit, and I use the same music every time, and it's some of my favorite music, so.
Spoken like a true editor.
As always. All right, well, let's get this podcast started. We're going to go ahead and hand it off to Shona, where she talks about the very spooky Redeads in Zelda games.
Halloween may be well and truly over for another year. However, I'm not quite ready to leave behind the dark and scary when it comes to Zelda. My name is Shona Johnson, and in this episode, I'll be taking a dive into the darker side of our favourite franchise and looking at some of the monsters that Link has to fight while on his journeys. Let's face it, it would be pretty boring to run around and explore the world without coming up against any opposition. Sometimes this opposition is in the form of a puzzle or a challenge, and at other times it's enemies. The enemies have always been one of my own favourite things about playing Zelda games, especially the monsters. I love to laugh at ridiculous enemies, I love being frightened by the scary ones, and I love the feeling of satisfaction that you get when you defeat a particularly tough one, or when you clear an area that is swarming with them. And I've always enjoyed those Savage Labyrinth and Cave of Ordeals type of dungeons where you pit your strength against hordes of them. The official Hyrule Encyclopedia talks a little bit about the origin of Zelda's enemies and breaks them down into two main categories, monsters and demons. Demons are born from the source of evil and they command and create evil, while monsters are corrupted by evil and do its bidding. So for example, Ganondorf became a demon king of his own will because he desired absolute power, while some of the monsters may have been innocent old animals, plants, or even machines that have been corrupted and manipulated by evil. I thought it would be fun to talk about some of the more noteworthy enemies that have appeared in the Zelda games. I'm not talking about your Octoroks or Bokoblins. You could call them noteworthy because they appear in almost every Zelda game, but there's nothing really impressive about them, and most of the time they're pretty much just sword fodder. I'm also not going to talk about bosses right now, although I think they could make for some interesting discussions another time. Bosses have their own set of expectations, and players inherently anticipate something huge, intimidating, and challenging when they know they'll encounter one. Instead, I want to talk about some of the more regular enemies that manage to hold their own and fill players with a sense of interest, awe, or dread about coming up against them. Let's start with Redeads. Redeads first arrived on the scene in Ocarina of Time, and then made appearances in Majora's Mask, The Wind Waker, and Triforce Heroes. Similar enemies called Redead Knights appeared in Twilight Princess and Hyrule Warriors, and some Gibdos, enemies that are based on Egyptian mummies that have been around since the first Zelda game, can also act in a similar way to Redeads. Redeads are quite simply terrifying. Their horrible scream, their appearance, and the way that they attack make for a pretty scary package. For those who have been lucky not to encounter one, Redeads are living humanoid corpses, and tell me that's not scary on its own. In Ocarina of Time and Majora's Mask, their bodies are brown, shriveled husks, and they wear spooky wooden masks. While in The Wind Waker, they're more of a turquoise colour and they have earrings and tattoos. If Link gets near them, they let out a high-pitched scream and paralyze him with a piercing gaze. Then they'll shuffle over to him, jump on his back, and proceed to drain the life out of him. In Ocarina of Time and Majora's Mask, they'll completely kill Link if he can't shake them off, while in The Wind Waker, their attack power is reduced and they'll only deal one heart of damage. They are an enemy that I love to dread. It's not very often where I feel legitimately unsettled while playing games, so I love that feeling of fearful anticipation that I get when I'm exploring an area where I might run into one. I know I don't want to run into them and I'm very cautious about it, but in those moments, I'm so immersed in the game and the atmosphere, and I can't wait to get back to somewhere safe. And any moment where a game has me captivated like that tends to make for a pretty magical experience. This is opposed to, say, a regular horror game where I know I'm going to be frightened and I know things will jump out at me and scare me all the time. When I play Zelda games, I don't feel like that all the time. I personally find that the Nintendo 64 Redeads are way creepier than any of the other versions. And this is based on both their appearance and the fact that they can completely drain Link. I learned to fear them pretty quickly after I first encountered them in Ocarina of Time's Royal Family's Tomb, when I ignorantly ran right up to one and was subsequently killed. Later in the game, it was a shock when I first awoke as an adult and ran out into Hyrule Castle Town, where I found that the once prosperous town was now in ruins and crawling with Redeads, which I assumed were the corpses of townspeople who had been killed during Ganondorf's attacks. The other thing that I find really creepy about them is when you kill one, all of the others in the area will slowly walk over to the body and even crouch down beside it before the body fades away. I don't know exactly what's going on there, but it kind of looks like the others are going to see if they can help or to mourn their fallen comrade. And this human-like behavior just makes them even more haunting in my eyes. Similarly, the Redeads in Majora's Mask were said to have once been members of the castle's dance troupe, and they're still dancing even in death. This makes them less outright scary, but more uncanny. I've never found the Wind Waker versions quite as scary. In part, this is because the cartoony graphics used in the game make their appearance more comical, and also because their attacks aren't as strong. But these Redeads can make for some pretty good jump scares, with the way that they hide in coffins and leap out when Link gets close, and their presence is still unsettling. Obviously, the more you play a game, you get stronger and you learn how to defeat certain enemies, and Redeads do have their weaknesses and ways they can be overcome. And even though I can breeze past them now, I'll always have a certain amount of fearful respect for them, and if I ever encounter them in a future game, I'm going to be taking it pretty carefully. In fact, the upcoming sequel to Breath of the Wild teases some dark themes, and a mummified corpse features heavily in the preview trailer that was shown at E3. At this point in time, I believe that this corpse is likely Ganondorf, but I see an opportunity for Redeads to make a return. Maybe other people were similarly mummified and will end up reanimated as enemies. I really wouldn't mind seeing Redeads make a return because I want to have some more enemies that I love to dread, the way I did with Breath of the Wild's Guardians and Lynels. Speaking of Lynels, they're also on my list of enemies that I love, and I really want to talk about them right now, but we're out of time for this episode, So I'll continue this segment in the next one, where I'll cover some more of my favourite enemies. Until then, listeners, I'd love to hear what some of your favourite Zelda enemies are, and the ones you'd love to hear me talk about in a future episode. You can let me know by adding your thoughts to the comments, tweeting at Zelda Universe, or emailing podcast@zeldauniverse.net. Or, if you want to have more of a one-on-one chat, feel free to reach out to me personally. My email address is Shona, that's S-H-O-N-A, @zeldauniverse.net, or you can find me on Twitter @ShonaAdventures, that's S-H-O-N-A, followed by the word adventures, without any spaces in between.
Is she done?
I don't know. I'm too scared to check.
I'm peeking out under my desk to see if Shona is done talking about monsters and demons and re-deads.
Re-deads are the worst!
They are annoying. And it seems like she's done. So thank you for that wonderful segment on re-deads, Shona. Do you have any trouble with re-deads in Zelda games, Kelly the Editor?
Oh, I sure did. Sure did. I remember stumbling upon them in the graveyard, and as a tiny 8-year-old, the only thing you can think of is, nope. And I turned right around and walked away, and I didn't get the Sun Song in my first playthrough because of that reason. And then got all the way to the Shadow Temple and had to deal with them again, and It was not great. It was not great. The Shadow Temple scared me so much as a kid that I almost didn't beat the game because that was the last temple I needed, and it was just so creepy, so eerie. I just couldn't do it, and the re-deads were kind of to blame for it.
I tended to go about things with a more methodical approach, and re-deads were just more annoying to me than scary, despite the fact that I just got done hiding under my desk. The Spirit Temple was just difficult for me. I could not beat the final boss, DK Bongos, until I had friends over and we were just casually playing, and then I was like, oh, I casually beat the boss, that's great. Fun times. Fun times. I too was a baby. An actual baby. But not an actual baby, because I was like 10 or something, I can't remember. Anyway, thanks again, Shona. What information that was informative.
Doing great, Elias. Doing great.
I am trying so hard to host you guys, but what I will tell you now is that I tried even harder to win that Ilya deathmatch coming up. Boy howdy. Let me tell you, you guys are in for a treat later when that thing happens.
Hang on. First, we gotta go to Randy's segment. He's talking about the like-likes in Zelda away from Zelda.
Fine.
Randy, go ahead. Take it away.
Like-likes. Is there a more hated enemy in any Zelda game? I mean, sure, re-deads, you can stun you, and that's annoying, and yeah, those birds in Link's Awakenings are just the biggest feathery little d-bags. But the like-like. He takes your stuff, he costs you money, and all for one simple slip-up. Take my hearts, but leave my rupees, you foul abomination from beyond. Hi, I'm Randy Marr, and no, I won't be talking about like-likes anymore. Instead, I'd like to talk to you lovely people about Zelda-likes. This is Hyrule Away from Hyrule, a segment about how Zelda looks outside of the frame of Zelda video games. Today, I'm going to talk about Zelda like-likes. Pause for audience groan. Randy, don't read that part out loud. Or this. Stop. Stop. What are you doing? The Legend of Zelda is a crown jewel of Nintendo. It's one of the most recognizable game series of all time, and it's enjoyed by millions the world over. But the real Zelda likes know how to take from the experience what they want to create their own game. That's what the focus of this will mostly be, so please forgive me if I forget about your favorite Zelda-ish game. There's just so many these days that I haven't played or just don't even know about. With the rise of indie games alone, there have been just a tremendous uptick in new Zelda-type games, games inspired by Zelda, and it makes it harder to find some of the good ones, you know? So If you have some, please leave them in the comments. Let us know. We would love to hear about them, and I would love to play them. I really feel like Zelda games went too long without being properly replicated in new forms. It's so much longer than anything else. Everyone can name 5 Mario ripoffs right now, but it wasn't until the PlayStation 2 that someone finally figured out how to get it right. You may remember the heated battle between Twilight Princess and Okami for Best Game of the Year back in 2006. On paper, because it's a painting, Okami doesn't look like it shares a lot with Zelda. It's much more focused on the action, it's more combo-heavy combat, and it's your usual, what we now know as Platinum Game kind of build, because that's who made it. It features a unique art style that, while comparable to Wind Waker, is clearly its own groovy thing inspired by ancient Japanese paintings and the like. Where the similarities start to come into play is more in the exploration. Okami isn't a very wide open world like you would think of one now, and it had a lot more in common with Ocarina of Time in terms of its just kind of general structure. You know, you're navigating specific areas, solving puzzles with the help of power-ups you acquire as you play through the game. It's that very puzzle hunting thing that really showcases how the developers at then Clover understood that they wanted to take something from Zelda to make their own thing and how to do it well. They honestly made an equally amazing game in the same year that Twilight Princess came out, and, you know, sure, you can have fan fights all along, but honestly, the winner is us because those two games are amazing. The next real big example of this would come next generation in the form of the Darksiders franchise. It had its own looks, lifted from renowned comic artist Joe Madureira, which looked a lot more kind of similar to World of Warcraft in its sort of grandiose, very meaty characters. Of course, the story was also a lot more grimdark than Zelda usually treads even at its darkest moments, but really, it's once you're in the game is when you realize, like, oh, this is kind of just a Zelda. You push blocks to gain access to areas, you use key items to explore new areas, there's epic boss battles. It wasn't a Zelda game down to a T, but there is a reason that everyone kind of compared it to one, especially back in that day when you were looking at like Twilight Princess and Ocarina of Time. Like, yeah, that game was definitely, we wanted to make a Zelda game with our own story and cool characters. I thought it was cool. I don't know. It's not everybody's thing. And as of right now, both Darksiders and Darksiders 2 are available on Switch, so if you're interested in something, definitely highly recommend go check them out. In recent years, a lot of indie devs have tried to recreate the magic of your older favorite Zeldas. Games like Minit, It'll Do, and Binding of Isaac have tried to keep gameplay relatively simple, but surprisingly deep. There's a lot of classic appeal in these, mostly borrowing from the NES-era Zelda, with some refreshingly modern ideas thrown in here and there. I think Minit would be my favorite of these so far, just because I love the way it looks and got like a time mechanic thing that I'm always a big fan of. But, you know, Binding of Isaac has a lot of good replayability. It's kind of that rogue adjacent type game where, you know, you're going to die a lot, but that's okay because just do it again. Oceanhorn is another game out there that has a very Wind Waker vibe to it. It looks very similar, like it's bright, colorful, like very stylized kind of characters. You know, you argue whether or not it's as good. Whatever, that's fine. It doesn't not everything has to be. But it looks good, and it is good. It's a good game. The only thing is, like, the thing I want out of Wind Waker is the sailing. Like, that's what I love the most. And this is all just sort of, like, click on the island to go to the island. So, you know, maybe you'll like it more because you hated the sailing. Within the last couple of years, there's been some games to come out that have even more of a rogue-adjacent gameplay mixed into the randomly generated world and dungeons of, well, I mean, Zelda doesn't have those, that's where the element comes in. Moonlighter, a game I reviewed for the site, features gorgeous pixel art animations, a cool shopkeeper story feature where you are the shopkeeper, and plenty of upgrades in all sorts of areas, be it, like, in your shop, in town, in your combat. The breadth of your choices for the arsenal I also found very surprising. Usually in these kinds of games you get, like, the sword, and then the bow is, like, a side weapon. You can just fight with a bow if you want. And the different ways you can upgrade them to your playstyle really just kind of help flesh that out a bit. Then we have Sword of Ditto, which I also reviewed for the site. It seems to be more upfront with making a few cracks at the Zelda series directly. For example, every time you die, you come back as another hero 100 years later. So the world you left when you died is just 100 years deeper in it. It's got this real kind of Cartoon Network vibe to it visually. I mean, it kind of looks like your Steven Universes, or it just looks like it would be at home next to those, basically. And it's honestly in all the best ways. Like, that is a compliment, I think, at least for me. My favorite thing about that game was the quality of the co-op. I highly recommend, if you're going to get into this one, you're interested in it, that you find a partner, settle down with, and just take it on, because it is a blast. And, you know, the thing you use to take between warp points is a flying bus, so that's good. If you're deep in more obscure video game news, you may have heard of a game called Genshin Impact. This game, developed in China, has been heavily criticized by Western audiences for looking nearly identical to Breath of the Wild. And I don't know, maybe I haven't looked deeply enough at it, but I don't really see anything past, well, here's a big open world with green grass and look, a castle. The gameplay is definitely much more action JRPG, it's much faster than Breath of the Wild. I also haven't seen a whole lot of like that survival aspect that Breath of the Wild was really big on, so it really just seems like it's all in the look. To be fair, honestly, I think that's a great compliment to the team that made Breath of the Wild, because imitation is the best form of flattery. And honestly, I think that's kind of a positive tick for Genshin Impact. If you're this studio that no one in the West has heard of, and now we're all saying like, wow, this game looks exactly like Zelda. There is one game that came out this year that doesn't look anything like a Zelda game, at least not at first. The Outer Wilds is a game about aliens on a backwater planet flying their hunk-a-junk shuttle into space to explore their galaxy. You can go anywhere you want after a brief tutorial, a freedom I haven't experienced since Breath of the Wild. Each planet and the entire galaxy is acting in real time. That means wherever you are in the galaxy, the rest of the galaxy is doing its thing. It is set on a very clockwork pattern. There's a very clear Majora's Mask influence here, down to having to explore certain areas within a specific time frame to get where you want to go. I'll say there's also a bit of a heavy Link's Awakening influence here, and this is where I start to run into problems recommending this game. Don't get me wrong, it's amazing. Go buy it. It is easily my favorite game this year, and I could probably take that back a few years. The problem is, if I start talking more about this game, I'm going to start removing the sense of joy in the exploration and the discovery that I felt when I was playing it, having learned next to nothing and just sort of taking a blind faith recommendation. The story that you will discover kind of comes at your own pace, and it's just by exploring all the different places whenever you want, wherever you want, and finding out how they work and what you can do within them. Similar to Breath of the Wild, all your tools, everything you will have the ability to do is given to you up front in the tutorial. And from there, it's just learning how the rest of the universe works and how you can take those tools and manipulate the universe. I know it's a hard sell to recommend someone play a game basically blind, but anyone who has played this game will tell you the same thing. This game, I promise, will drop your jaw. It will give you a feeling of discovery I haven't had since Breath of the Wild, and it may have been better? This game will stick with you, frankly. At least a little. I played it back in July when I bought an Xbox One because it was part of Game Pass, and I was kind of digging into all that. And nothing this year will topple that. I don't care how surprisingly dope Luigi's Mansion is, which it is, but this game haunts me in a way. You know, the last thing I'll say about The Outer Wilds is don't confuse it for The Outer Worlds. While that game is also incredible, it is a Fallout-ish sci-fi game by Obsidian. The Outer Wilds is an independent venture with more originality up its sleeve than the combination of most other games this year. Please go play it. It's only $25 on any platform, sadly, but Switch, but it is on PC and PS4, Xbox. And if you do subscribe to Game Pass on Xbox or PC, it is available there. Now, these are just a few of the Zelda-like likes, as I know you're probably expecting to hear more. The fact is, the Zelda franchise has been so many things at different points in its history, and it's inspired so many other games to go on and do different things. But those influences always manifest in different ways. Now, almost 3 years after Breath of the Wild, we're starting to see those influences come into their own in games like Outer Wilds and Genshin Impact. In the future, we have a new Breath of the Wild sequel, so it'll be interesting to see how the original makers can take what they made and how that inspires them to make something newer with it. And, you know, brings me to a few questions here. What is your favorite aspect of Zelda games? Is it the story? Or is it the sense of exploration and wonder and joy when you discover something? Is it the gameplay with its fairly methodical but usually engaging combat? How about the puzzles that you have to really scratch your head to figure out, and just that sense of, like, skipping your heels once you finally solve that puzzle that's been bothering you for an hour? Either way, I want you to think about this, and I mean dig really deep, because the next time you hear from me, we are going to have the conclusion of Hyrule Away from Hyrule, and we're going to talk about everything I've basically talked about to really hammer out this one singular concept. What makes a good Zelda game a good Zelda game? Thank you again for listening, as always. I am so happy to have you here. You can find me on Twitter at RandyMarGames, or find me writing for Zelda Universe occasionally. I hope you all have a wonderful holiday season. If I don't see you again, please love yourselves and each other, and just be well.
Thanks, Randy. Man, my first experience with a like-like in Zelda Ocarina of Time, from what I can remember, I wasn't exactly sure what it was and got a little too close, got eaten, and then my shield was gone.
That's how like-likes work, yes.
Yeah, I was so confused and startled, I didn't know what to do, so I just reset the game and tried again on a different save.
I would be lying if I said that I too had never gotten eaten by a like-like, lost my Hylian shield that I had paid a lot of rupees for, was upset, and reset to my latest save instead. Because I've definitely done that. For sure, 100%. Like-likes are not fun, kids, but Zelda like-likes are. Go play them. But you know what else is fun? Is the Ilion Deathmatch coming up. Oh boy. I am just on the edge of my seat, just waiting for that segment to come out. What do you think the Ilion Deathmatch is gonna entail? Kelly, the editor, who has definitely not already edited this?
Well, I can definitely tell you that Amanda has some points. And I can also tell you that Elias also has some points. And I can also inform you that Alex Rosenberg is there.
What an exhilarating preview to that deathmatch. I know that excites me. But also what excites me is community news. Man, you know, when I'm sitting down at my coffee table in the morning with my newspaper and my reading glasses and my walker, because I'm an old man apparently, there's nothing more that I look forward to than reading the news. And the community news is even better, because then you can see what's going on in the Zelda Universe forums right there from your newspaper. It's great. You have that similar experience, Kelly?
Sure do.
Yep. It's a staple for anyone's morning, I think. For sure, 100% success rate. So anyway, community news is next. Anne and Realm, go ahead and tell us the news.
Hey everyone, it's time for another look at the community news, straight from the ZUBC News Desk.
It's Mahogany.
I am the Zelda Anne.
And I'm Realm.
Let's do the thing. Our top headline today comes from the General Gaming Board. It has been a tradition around this time these past few years for ZUers to vote on the top game of the year. However, seeing as how we just entered a new decade, Forum Admin Tai has proclaimed that this time around, we're voting for our top games of the decade. To participate and or follow along with the tournament, check out the pinned thread in General Gaming. Realm, I'm curious, what's your game of the decade?
Well, for me, my game of the decade would have to be Splatoon. A lot of really great games came out this decade, like I could think of Persona 5 or Skyward Sword or Link Between Worlds even. Most of those are Zelda games, I know. But for me, the fact that Splatoon was just such an original idea and such a unique design out of Nintendo was really cool to me and really stuck with me. What's your favorite game of the decade?
Oh, I totally agree with you. There are so many games that ended up coming out during this decade that are just fantastic. I totally agree with you with Persona 5 and Splatoon. But I'd probably say I really do like Breath of the Wild and Skyward Sword. I love the stories of Skyward Sword. They did a fantastic job with it, even though the motion controls can be a pain. But I really do like the story in Skyward Sword. Breath of the Wild was just like a fresh new take on an open world concept to a Zelda game. I can't wait for the new game of Breath of the Wild 2. I'm super excited about that.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think Skyward Sword and Breath of the Wild are interesting because they kind of complement each other, as in where Skyward Sword has issues, Breath of the Wild succeeds. But where Breath of the Wild has issues, Skyward Sword succeeds, namely in story. And so I think those two games are really interesting. And I think, and I hope, that in the coming decade that Skyward Sword will become more appreciated, because it really is a very good game.
I totally agree. I just hope, cross my fingers, that they end up doing a remake of it. But I guess we'll just have to see what the new year ends up coming up with, and also the new decade. But anyway, Realm, let's get back to the script.
Yep. Anyway, before we leave general gaming, I just want to bring your attention to the Pokemon thread, which is booming with discussion since November's release of Sword and Shield. In fact, it's gotten a little heated at times, but no matter. Feel free to jump into the discussion or just pop in to brag about the amazing Max Raid battle you just did.
Yay for Pokemans! Next on the list of news is a couple of noteworthy threads about the Breath of the Wild sequel, which we're still all eagerly awaiting. First up, MVS started a bet on whether or not Zelda herself will be a playable character in the sequel. Winners will have bragging rights, while the losers will be obligated to mention their loss in their form signature. The poll is actually pretty evenly matched as of reporting.
On that bet, I will have it known that I joined and then raised the stakes on myself, so Nintendo, you had better put Zelda as a playable character in Breath of the Wild 2. The other less risky thread is by Sam Cringe, who is asking what kinds of new areas ZUers would like to see in the game. It's not a bet, but I'm still putting my money on another kind of city in the sky area. Well, maybe not what I think we'll see, but I would really like to see that, because City in the Sky in the lead up to that dungeon in Twilight Princess is one of the coolest things in any Zelda game, and I would really just like to see something like that again.
Both the bet thread and the new areas thread are located in the Breath of the Wild sequel and future Zelda board.
That's one board, by the way. Thanks for confusing us, admins. You know, sometimes it seems that Zelda fans are never satisfied. Take forums veteran Lorulian, who recently posted an instantly contentious thread in Classic Zelda entitled Majora's Mask. Overrated?
My opinion about Majora's Mask is I absolutely love it. Yes, the 3-day thing can definitely take a getting used to, but I love the story that they end up bringing into it. Like, not just the main quest, but like the side quests of the whole game. Like, for instance, when you end up going after each of these different masks, you end up getting different stories that just touches your heart. Like, for instance, with the dad that you ended up getting the mummy mask for. Sorry, I'm terrible with the names of the masks. But how it's just so touching that the daughter was waiting for her dad. It's an amazing game. I just love how it touches my heart.
Yeah, I totally agree. As someone who is a prime supporter of a number of Zelda games people usually don't like, I feel it is necessary to defend a actually really good game that it's cool not to like now. And Majora's Mask is a prime example of how less is more in game design, oftentimes, whereas it presents you with a very limited set of areas. Well, still not a really small set of areas, but a very limited time frame. And you can just spend hours and hours in that game. It's very tightly crafted and one of the best Zelda games, if not the best, and one of the best games of the past two decades, if not the best. Well, in any case, go make your opinions known in the Majora's Mask overrated thread in Classic Zelda Today. Just don't break any rules in the process.
Several active ZUers have undergone username changes recently. Big Bad Bagel is unfortunately back to being Dark Link Reigns. To us here at the ZUBC, you'll always be Big Daddy Biggles. Keep it real, Biggles.
And I never thought I'd be reading this headline, but the world of the Shrek movie series has evidently infected the Din clan, as several prominent Dinnies are now masquerading as Shrek characters, using their names and sporting their images as avatars. Din Mod Solicitor is now Lord Farquaad. ZU Discord Manager Froyo Dragon is now Fiona, Zor Luigi is Donkey, and Korok Peach is, and I quote, Dragon, parenthetically, that Donkey marries. And that's just a few of them. As a member of the Nehru clan, I raise my eyebrows at Din and call them strange. Now, please excuse me as I join my clan mates in a user profile makeover featuring Hatsune Miku.
Y'all clan people are weird. Go no, clan people! I interrupt the community news currently in progress to wish each and every listener a happy holidays and a happy new year.
In the words of someone named PowerShot, Merry Christmas Hana Kwan Stravaganza. I don't know who that is or what that means, but I'm just reading the script. What a mouthful.
Agreed. Glad that wasn't my line. But at the same time, I just have to put that out there. You did a great job with that word. I don't think I could have done that.
Thank you. We go now to the creative corner, ZU's board for posting user-created content like art, writing, and media. November's creator of the month was none other than forum admin Tai, who regularly posts Let's Plays of multiplayer first-person shooters like Rainbow Six Siege or Call of Duty, featuring himself and several other ZUers, especially members of the so-called League of Beards.
That's still a thing?
The League of Beards will still be a thing long after Zelda Universe is just an artifact on the Internet Archive.
That's ominous. Anyway, congrats on your honor, Tai. Thanks for entertaining us all with your untimely virtual demises. You can check out Tai's most popular Let's Plays in the ZU Plays Oops thread in Creative Corner. Incidentally, there was no Creator of the Month in December. I wasn't given a reason why, which is shady because Eslo Spirit gives us the news, and they have insider knowledge on the Creative Corner. For shame.
Yeah, Eslo, shame.
A few ZU writing contests have come and gone since the last installment of Community News. October's prompt was Family Feud, but only one person entered, so that didn't pan out. November's prompt was The Ones Who Are Left Behind. Jeez, that's creepy. Anyway, three people entered, but contest regular Fallen Darkheart won unanimously. That's unprecedented. Her winning entry was the emotional short, A True Hero. Nice job, Fallen.
we can't declare a winner for December's contest yet, but the prompt was sacrificing a loved one for the greater good. Yeesh, that's kind of screwed up. I'm afraid to read the entries.
Go read them and cast your vote, Realm.
And that brings us to the ZUer of the month, our last stop on their fantastical journey that is the community news. November's ZUer of the month was Cid, that's spelled C-I-D, not S-I-D, and don't you forget it. Cid's been around a few years, and he's known for his fun sense of humor and musical talent, on top of just being a great person. Here's part of what his friend Count Dante had to say about him. It's been a pleasure being a friend of yours in the forums. I still remember the day you made your first thread introducing yourself, or when you were courageous enough to post your handsome face in the scrapbooks thread. I still even recall our childish antics around the forum games section or Kay's Guess Who game. Seeing you grow in this community has been an honor, and I'm so glad that your personality is being recognized and awarded through this, as it is evident that the very same users congratulating you recognize the charismatic and kind user that you are. You have been nothing but a breath of fresh air in the community, and I'm looking forward to speaking with you and participating in future forum game activities.
Thanks for coming back to us, Cid, and we hope you enjoyed your time in the spotlight. December's ZUer of the month was special. See, during the first week of the month, Lady Sunshine announced that she and Big Daddy, Darklink Reigns, had forgotten to pick a ZUer of the month and were dedicating the month to all of ZU. Except, she didn't know that DLR had already chosen her as the ZUer of the month behind her back.
Best April Fool's prank ever.
Yeah, and it's not even April. Here's what ZU Oldby Mirian said about Lady Sunshine. Lady Sunshine is one of the most enthusiastic, supportive, and compassionate members I've had the pleasure of knowing at ZU. Her love and passion for this community is unparalleled. She has given so much to making this a warm, inclusive environment that any member, whether new, old, one here every day, or one only occasionally active, can feel her influence. A fellow Red Wall aficionado, a super talented artist, and an ambitious yet welcoming leader, I am proud to call her a friend. Congratulations on a very well-deserved honor.
Long story short, if you don't love Lady Sunshine, you're a monster. We all love you, Lady Sunshine. Congrats on your month.
Before we go, we have a couple announcements of our own. First off, I don't know if you remember, but for our last episode, someone recorded themselves reading their feedback for the ZUer of the month and sent that in to us to play instead of one of us reading it for them. We'd love to make this a recurring thing, so if you want to record a 30-second audio clip of yourself praising the next ZUer of the month, just let Eslo Spirit know, and they'll be happy to get you involved.
Yeah, the warm and fuzzies are both warmer and fuzzier when read in the voice of the one who they're from. Lastly, Eslo is getting mentally prepared for another interview with a member of the forum staff, and they'd like to give you the chance to decide who that should be. Just like the interview with the admins last spring, this one will be a ZU cast exclusive, and you'll have a chance to submit your own questions. Look out for a poll in Community Central in the future.
And we're done here. We say this every time, but if there's something you want us to announce here next time, shoot a PM to either Realm Wings or Eslo Spirit.
No one has ever done it. Tell us your secrets so we can leak them to the world.
That's not quite what I had in mind, but sounds fun too.
I'm Realm.
And I am the Zelda Anne.
Until next time. Oh, and the Winter Awards may be underway when you hear this, so go do the thing.
Oh, hey, cool, we're done. Sorry, I was just catching it, glaring me out. Hey, thanks for the news, Anne and Realm. Man, I don't know if Zelda's going to be playable in Breath of the Wild 2. I sure hope that it's a good video game, though. What do you think, Kelly? Do you want it to be playable? Do you want Zelda to be playable, I mean? Or do you think it will happen?
Yeah, I think having Zelda be a playable character in Breath of the Wild 2 would be cool. I'd be very, very careful of how I do it, though, because it's kind of like, that was kind of like the magic of Zelda in like kind of the old school games, was you couldn't play as Zelda. You were Zelda's support character. You were the one that did the saving and things like that. I really think for Breath of the Wild 2, and this is just speculation, I think that she's going to be kind of your partner and she'll be following you around. I don't think she'll be playable, but I think she'll be your partner. I think she'll be there. I think she'll use magic to kind of help you through some puzzles. And I feel like there's also going to be the puzzles where you need two people to complete them, where like you need one person to stand on one button and somebody else needs to stand on another button to get the door open. You know, simple Zelda-like puzzles like that.
Classic two-button door.
Yeah. My hope is that, you know, she makes a good appearance in Breath of the Wild 2, because that was the one thing that I was missing in the first Breath of the Wild, was that she was just so scarce. And she was supposed to be this big prize at the end of the game, where it's like you want to save her, you want to help her, you know, things like that. But, like, she wasn't really there in Breath of the Wild 1, and that's the one thing I want to have in Breath of the Wild 2. I want her to have a presence, so that's what I'm hoping.
She was there in our hearts and our 10 to 12 to 13 memories. And really, what else can you ask for? Except, you know, to be playable. I just think that if Zelda ends up being the main playable character in Breath of the Wild 2, that they call the game The Legend of Link. To just really mess with people.
Yeah, name it The Legend of Link, and then have you only play Zelda. That'd be fantastic.
The thing is, you still have to market it, right? So it would be called The Legend of Zelda, The Legend of Link.
Oh, okay. I get what you're saying now.
Yeah, it makes total sense. Completely, 100%. Don't at me. I can't believe I just said that. Alex is rubbing off on me.
Yeah, right? Super is. Speaking of Alex... Elias.
Yes, Kelly, the editor.
It is time.
Time for what?
For something wonderful.
What something is wonderful? I've completely forgotten what I've talked about 10 minutes ago.
Well, we're going to go ahead and jump on into the Ilia Deathmatch.
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited. I forgot all about this. Oh boy, you guys are going to have fun listening to this.
You sure are. This is so exciting. All right, well... I'm going to go ahead and pass this mic over to Alex, and he's going to take it away.
Thank you, Kelly. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the most exciting deathmatch debate thing that you've ever heard. My name is Alex Rosenberg. I'm one of the hosts here for Zelda Universes Podcast. I'm also media director. And today, we are going to do a throwdown on the character of Ilia from Twilight Princess. I am joined by two people with very opposing views. On the side of I Like Ilia, we have one of the hosts for this episode, Mr. Elias Thompson.
Hello. I am here to defend her honor.
And on the I Hate Ilia side, we have the lovely Amanda Van Heil.
Thank you, Alex. Ilia's the worst.
So here's how this debate, deathmatch, throwdown thing, whatever you want to call it, is going to work. I am going to let each of these guys do their opening statements, and then we're going to talk a little bit about Ilia as a character and Ilia's impact to the overall plot arc. Those are going to be two entirely separate topics. I'm going to be giving them each 2 minutes for their opening statement, and then 3 minutes each for the actual topics themselves. If they go over 3 minutes, I will let them finish their sentence, and I will be cutting them off for time. We will also let them do closing remarks. That'll be another 2 minutes as well. If there are anything that comes in between, we'll do that as we go. With that being said, Amanda.
Yes.
I We'll let you have the floor first. You have 2 minutes, starting now.
All right, I can't stand Ilya, and it comes from an extremely personal level. Long time ago, I was a young theater student who was sick with mono, playing Twilight Princess, and then along comes this awful character named Ilya, who reminds me of this girl that this guy I'm into, like, says she's his girlfriend. Personally, I think she doesn't even exist, but the similarities were way too much there, and I'm petty and will hold a grudge for a long time. Also, Ilya has no personality whatsoever, except for, I'm just gonna scold Link because he's being mean to Epona, and Epona was not, like, all that badly hurt. What, a sore foot or whatever? That happens to anybody who's outside being active. She's, like, clearly one of those people who goes online and sees, like, a cat being, like, scratched on his back and going, meow, and says, oh my goodness, you're abusing the cat. That's my thoughts on Ilya. I think she's terrible for reason. And yeah, I realize I'm being petty. I don't care. I'm okay with it. But she's just an awful character. There's no point to her. She doesn't further the story. I think she's pointless.
Very, very pointed opinions. And here on the Zeldingverse podcast, we live for the petty. So, I feel. Elias.
To be perfectly honest, living for the petty is not a very good way of life. To fully hate a fictional character because of the actions of an unrelated yet similar real-life person is not only the definition of petty, it's flat out just rude for a fictional character who can't defend themselves because they are not that person. Whenever you look at Ilya objectively, and as a character without a real-life comparison, you see that she's a lovely young woman who obviously speaks and acts from a place of compassion. She's only looking out for the well-being of the horse, and she's only looking out for the well-being of the children later on. I can't think of a single reason why anyone in their right mind would ever hate Ilya.
So now, we're now going to transition into our first topic, which is Ilya as a character. For this, we're going to be looking into the writing and how she stands up as a character in relationship to Link compared to other characters in the Zelda franchise. And we might go into other details as well, as per the discretion of our two debaters. For this, I am giving you each 3 minutes. Same rules apply. If you go over, I will let you finish your statement and then I will cut you off. Elias. Your time begins now.
Sure. So relationship to Link, obviously childhood friends. They live in the same village. They hang out with each other. They're pretty much the only two people in the village that I can remember or notice that are about the same age. They often talk to both children as peers as well as adults because they're kind of right in the middle there. That said, that obviously allows them to form a closer relationship than they probably have with anyone else, be it friends or otherwise. We don't really know. In terms of writing, her dialogue is very, very genuine and caring. Anytime she does get upset, which my opponent has brought up already, again, it's not irrational upset. It's reasonable. I can't imagine anyone who would not care about a horse's well-being, and she obviously temporarily misplaced her anger about the cause of the harm, as anyone might accidentally do, because she is human and not Hylian, and humans make mistakes. I'm sure all of us can attest to that, and whenever she realized she did make a mistake, she apologized, which not all humans do, and so yeah, you know, I think that the writing and the dialogue of the character, as well as her relationship to Link, are very, very real and genuine.
How do you think that their relationship stacks up compared to Link's relationships in other Zelda games?
Link's relationships in other Zelda games? Well, that's a lot. I definitely think it's among the top tier, right? Because, again, they've known each other for probably their whole lives. Whereas very few other Links have had relationships that have lasted that long. You look at Navi, just met. Midna, just met. People like Ariel is great, but then again, it's a sisterly relationship along with the grandmother. Zelda in Breath of the Wild, kind of known a long time, but also met because of an event, not because they grew up together. So the fact that they grew up as childhood friends, I think really solidifies their bond in a way that not a lot of other characters that have a relationship with Link can have.
Excellent. Amanda.
Yes.
You have 3 minutes, same topics as well. Remember, when we're talking about relationship to Link, we're not only talking about it as it is in-game, but also how it stacks up to other relationships Link has had in the franchise. You have 3 minutes starting now.
Ilya's purpose is just to get in the way of Zelda and Midna and every other, and even Malin, who's not even in the same game as him, who Mipha, she's just getting in the way of everybody. That's all her purpose is just for to lead Link. She totally leads him on. She leads him on the entire time, makes him think that, like, she's interested when she's totally not. She just wants to, like, watch him get that little smile on his face. Also, I would talk about her character development, but she doesn't have any because she is the flattest character I've ever met or seen. I guess I've never actually met her. I just feel like I know her because I just really don't like her that much. As far as other games with Link's character and relationships, there's Skyward Sword, where Link and Zelda knew each other forever and cared about each other. There's Breath of the Wild, where he cared about Zelda, and Zelda and him had... You actually watch their relationship evolve from caretaker knight to ally. He also had a relationship with Mipha, or Mipha was hoping to have a relationship with him. Even Prince Sidon cheered him on and had more personality to him than Ilya. Saria, who barely had much screen time. Same with Nibiru. Both of them didn't have all that much screen time. Both of them have better character arcs than Ilya. What, Ilya loses her memory and that's it? Big deal. She doesn't act any differently when she doesn't have a memory than when she does. Also, I'm just going to point out that she doesn't have any friends her own age. And for Link to be the only one close to her age and her to treat him like that, probably not all that cool.
Say the same thing about Link in Twilight Princess. Doesn't have any other friends his age, and so he gravitates towards Ilya. And I really don't see how Ilya gets in the way of Malin and Mipha being in other games, as well as how she could lead him on without showing interest. They don't really show.
She uses her jerkish powers of manipulation to be like, look at me, I'm a girl, pay attention to me.
The same could be said about any other woman that Link comes across in any other game. There is,
I'm okay with that.
No way, one way or the other, to show that she's leading him on without actual genuine interest.
She's totally leading him on.
From here, let us talk about Ilya's impact to the overall plot. Now, the plot of Twilight Princess is kind of a hash of Ocarina of Time to some respect. It is one that once you get into the core part of the game, a lot of the main characters sort of fall to the wayside. And it's very clear that Ilya does sort of do that as well. For this, I'm going to defer back to Amanda as our start. Amanda, you have 3 minutes on the overall plot arc impact. Again, you may take as long as you want or as little as you want, as long as it's within the 3 minute period, of course. Your time begins now.
I really don't think she has that much of an impact on the game except for making me angry when I see her. You don't even have to do her quest. I mean, you get like a special... What is it you get if you actually bring her memory back? It's not all that important.
You get a horse call for Epona.
Oh, big deal. Who cares? You get fast travel, so you don't even need Epona at that point. So she really doesn't have all that much of an impact on the plot, except for just being annoying.
Is part of her quest also to go to the Hidden Village and get a particular item?
Yes. Yes. Yes,
maybe.
It is.
You could have gone, you know what? You could have done that quest without her. You could have done that quest without her. She is totally unnecessary. Like, there's no point to her whatsoever.
Okay. Is that your case?
That is my case. She doesn't have any character arc. She doesn't grow as a character. You don't see anything, like, change. You don't know what she wants. She doesn't have a goal. She's just there. Like, if I were playing that role, I would just be like, I don't know. I'd have to make everything up because... I don't know what Ilya wants because I don't think she wants anything except for maybe to lead Link on. So that's how I would play it. That would be my tactics and my goals and my choices if I were playing the role of Ilya would just be leading Link on. That's her ultimate goal.
Elias.
Alex.
You have 3 minutes starting now.
Well, I agree to some extent with my colleague here that the game doesn't spend nearly as much time as it should around Ilya. Ilya does provide a few key plot moments to the game, including at the very beginning, after all this tutorial nonsense. Ilya's abduction is the catalyst that Link needs to actually set off on his adventure and leave Ordin and leave the forest. Midna at that point is an annoyance that he's using because she can get him access to places. It's not until later that he actually has a relationship with Midna. So the driving force at the beginning of the game for Link really is to rescue Ilya. Now, once he actually finds Ilya and finds out that she doesn't have her memories anymore, that is something that he wants to fix, but doesn't figure out a way to fix it until much later. And granted, he does have other motivations at that point. Another thing is that you have to interact with Ilya several times to actually beat the main plot of the game. In regards to the Hidden Village, that is required to help not only restore her memories, but in the process, further along to plot to get to one of the last dungeons. Although I feel like she should have more, she does have a very decent impact into the overall plot arc. Unfortunately, the series isn't called The Legend of Ilya, and so people like Zelda and the main companion of the game, Midna, get more of a spotlight alongside Link. But in terms of not having that, Ilya, I think, is a very vital character in the game that I hope one day we see more of.
Very eloquently spoken. So, at this time, we are going to do a closing remark about Ilya and everything before we sort of tie this up in a bow and ship it off for the internet to decide. Elias, I will have you go first. You have 2 minutes.
Sure. I feel like I've proven my case here that Ilya as a character is unique in the Zelda series in that she's very, very kind and compassionate. Has known Link for a very, very long time and is more than once vital to the plot of the game that she's in. I think that to base an opinion on a fictional character that is based off of an emotional response to real life people is not only irrational, but unfair to Ilya. I think that she deserves a fair chance to speak for herself with her own actions and not her implied actions, or again, actions compared to that of individuals in real life. So to conclude, yes, I think Ilya is a very, very fine and lovely character that we should see more of in the Zelda franchise going forward.
Eloquently spoken. Amanda, the same goes to you. You have 2 minutes starting now.
The more I think about Ilya and the more I talk about her, the more she gets on my nerves. Really, any character could have taken Link on the quest to get out of the village or go to the hidden village or get the horse or all of that. She was completely unnecessary. They could have just written a history with Zelda and had something going on there. Midna could have done something. You know what? And also, the fact that he got a greater relationship with Midna, who he barely even knew, ended up with a very strong relationship with her, as opposed to this girl that he's known apparently his whole life, and they barely even talk to each other. That doesn't really say much about her character. Sounds like she's just very standoffish, because all she wants to do is hang out with the little kids, because she doesn't know how to socialize with anybody else. Yes, I will continue to base her on real life people, because that's what art does. Art makes you think. Art can anger. Art can cause many feelings, and that's what this did. So, successfully, it was an artistic piece, and it did the job of me thinking about somebody that I don't like.
And that's why we're here.
I'm glad that you feel that Ilya is an artistic piece.
Not all art is good art.
Also true. And that concludes our deathmatch debate thing. Now, the question turns to you listeners. Do you like Ilya? Do you have an opinion? Please let us know in the comments wherever you find this or on Twitter as well. You can find all of us on Twitter at Elias Thompson, at Luke_Starks. That's me. Amanda, what's your Twitter? I don't remember your Twitter. Oh, I should have known. That is where you can find all of us. Amanda, what specifically can they find if they follow you?
Well, you can find me on Twitter at Amanda Van Hile, where I share cosplay pictures, pictures with my lovely cats. I host Zelda News each week here on Zelda Universe TV on our YouTube channel. Also write some news. I go to conventions all the time, representing Zelda Universe there. And you can also follow me on Twitch at Panda Princessa. I also stream on the Zelda Universe Twitch channel, Zelda Universe TV, on Sunday nights, where I play Running Blind, a show where I play games I've never played before. And if you visit my website, you can go to amanda.vanhile.com to find my voiceover reel, as well as clips of shows I've been in and headshots and more cosplay pictures and all that.
And I can be reached over at Luca_Starks on Twitter, Instagram, and Twitch, where I do a ton of talking about video games, talking about theater, and also playing video games poorly online, mostly the Ocarina of Time Randomizer, but some other cool things like Lego Star Wars and stuff as well. I'm also on YouTube at youtube.com/LucasStarks without the underscore, and then alexrosenberg.net on other parts of the internet, as well as here on the Zelda Universe podcast. Also, I am Pierre in Realms of the Wild on the Zelda Universe Twitch. I will let Elias chill himself over on the credits of the Zelda Universe podcast, and I will let Elias take over into the rest of the podcast. Thanks for having us, guys.
Thanks, Alex and Amanda and previous version of me. You know, Ilya is clearly one of the best characters who is underdeveloped and deserves to return to more fully explore her character. I think that's something we can all take away from that, and also that it's pronounced Epona and not Epona. Kelly, what are your thoughts on that deathmatch now that we've hit the hype?
You know, Elias, I have one question. One.
Yes, what is your just one question, Kelly the editor?
Who won that debate?
Oh, yes. Well, I think that clearly the people listening won the debate because all the points were left out on the table. They're able to now make their own informed decisions, but also me. I won the debate. It was clearly me. Also.
Well, hey, whoever you thought won, whether it be Amanda or Elias or you as the listener, give us some feedback, let us know, type down in those comments who you think won and why, just because I'm curious.
What if people think Alex won because he moderated that?
That's an option, I guess.
It sure is. Anything's an option if you believe in your dreams, kids, whether it be beating the spirit temple full of re-deads, or playing Zelda like-likes, or clearly deciding that Ilya is the best character in all of the Zelda series.
She's great.
She is great. Yes.
Well, I mean, Ilya gives you the best item in the game. She gives you the horse call, and I feel like I've used that more than anything in that game.
I disagree. But she is there for support to Link.
When she remembers him.
Yes, whenever she remembers. Your brain damage is a serious thing, and you don't want to ever mess with that. That's for sure. Don't lose your memory, kids.
Don't do it.
Don't do it.
PSA. Don't do it.
The more you know, which I'm hoping isn't copyrighted. Cool podcast. Man, I had so much fun learning a lot this past hour or under, hopefully, about re-deads and Zelda-like likes and all the wonderful news we heard in the community and about Ilya, but I already knew that, clearly, because I won the deathmatch. What about you, Kelly? What was your most fondest memory of the past 45 or so minutes?
I mean, I'm really happy that I'm not going to have to edit too much out, so...
Spoken like a true editor. Take that, Cody Davies. Plus one to Elias.
Well, I hope you had fun hosting this with me, Elias. It was such a treat to have you on.
I had so much fun hosting with one of my favorite people, Kelly the editor. See, I didn't even act like it was someone else that time. See, I'm learning.
Yeah, you did it right this time.
I'm evolving. I'm getting character development, just like Ilya.
Always bringing it back to that. Well, if you have any feedback to give us, go ahead and let us know. Message in the comments below. And if you really like Elias, ask him to come back.
Yes.
I know I will.
Definitely go into the feedback form and or email address and or DM, whatever it is, and say, we want more Elias, so that I can be all diva and be like, no, I'm exclusive. I don't do every podcast. And then it's like a treat for you guys, because my ego is apparently that big.
Well, Elias, if people do want to continue talking to you and seeing how your day is, where can they find you?
You can find me at Elias Thompson everywhere on the internet, including most social media, Twitch, all the cool and hip places, except MySpace or Zanger Friendster.
Not there?
Yeah. I bet that no one listening is old enough to get those jokes. Anyway, yeah, at Elias Thompson everywhere that matters. What about you, Kelly, the editor? Where can people go to follow you on the internet and not real life like a stalker?
If you want to follow me online, I'm on Twitter. I'm Kelly, the editor. Go figure. That's KellyTheEditor. Thank you all very, very much for listening. We hope that you'll listen again in the future. But next up are the credits.
Thank you all so much. That's it. The end. Goodbye. Take it away, Cody and or Eden.
Whoever is doing it this time, because we are not sure. It's usually Eden, but Cody might be stepping in because this is his favorite segment. So, we'll see.
Just don't give him a shovel. Please. Never.
Hey, thank you for checking out the ZU Cast. I promise I have a special gift for you if you listen through to the end of the credits. This episode's hosts were Kelly Timmerman and ZU Twitch Director and Finance Minister Elias Thompson, finally earning an actual credit on here instead of a joke one. Shona Johnson started Halloween super early this year by celebrating the Zelda franchise's creepiest denizens, Rededs. Randy Marr talked about my favorite enemy in the Huh? What's that? Oh, he didn't actually talk Oh. Sorry, got it now. Randy Marr presented the penultimate edition of his long-running Hyrule Away from Hyrule segment, looking at Zelda-like... likes. Likes! Ah. The Zelda Ann and Realm Wings reported on year-end ZU Forum goings-on in the community news. Alex Rosenberg moderated our highly anticipated Ilya debate, featuring wannabe Ilya murderer Amanda Van Hyle and wannabe Ilya befriender Elias Thompson. No Ilyas were harmed in the making of that segment. Eden Biskin, yours truly, is the executive producer and first semester of grad school survivor. Cody Davies is our consulting producer and recent birthday boy. Kelly Timmerman is our head editor and all-around wizard. Doing the public relations for the ZUBC are Mary Stowe and Pietro Bucci. Joshua Lindquist is our technical advisor. He, Realmwings, and Peyton Garrett make up the ZUBC's ad hoc graphics team. Elias Thompson is our source for Metroid trivia, Disclaimer, we have yet to utilize his Metroid-related services. The ZU Cast is a production of the ZUBC, a division of Zelda Universe. We are positively starved for feedback. If you send us some, we'll respond to it on the podcast. Just don't expect us to plug your Twitch stream. Remember, this is about us. You can send us your feedback via email, podcast@zeldauniverse.net, via the ZU forums in the brand spanking new ZUcast Hub 2020 thread in Community Central, or via ZU's social media. Our social media is as follows. @ZeldaUniverse on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and ZeldaUniverse TV on YouTube and Twitch. Please don't make us beg. Happy New Year, everyone. We'll catch you next time. Huh? Special gift for listening through the credits? Oh, yeah. Here it is.
I'm trying to drink coffee as quickly as possible, so.
She's going to talk about Rededs and how they have... relate to Zelda games.
Nope.
Go ahead.
No.
I can edit you talking out. I was talking fine.
Well, but I didn't want to cut you off because you weren't done talking about Rededs.
That's all I was going to say. So you're next. No.
This is a note for Kelly. Take two.
I would like to just interject a very quick question because of your random flub of she is the flattest character I've ever met. If you ever met this character... What Mean Girls character would she be?
Oh, gosh.
Would she be a Karen? Would she be a Gretchen Wieners? Would she be a Regina? I have to know. Would she be the type of person that would spell...
She would be a Gretchen Wieners.
She'd be a Gretchen Wieners? Okay. So she wouldn't be a person that would put a D in the word orange. Good to know.
No.
What? I'm excited. Are you excited?
So excited. Cool.
Please save me from myself.
I mean, if you want to re-record that, I have power to do that.
I was planning on rolling with it, but if you want to...
Alright, we can roll with it. It's fine. Okay, we can roll with it. Sorry.
It's up to you if you think you can make it work.
I can make it work. Hold on, I'm gonna redo that. I don't want that.
Are you talking from experience, Kelly?
I don't want that in the podcast. They're changing my mind. Oh no. Oh, I'm gonna start that again.
That's too bad.
I'm gonna start that again. I'm starting that again, Elias. Don't judge me.
I'm always judging everyone, Kelly.
I know.
That's who I am.
Well, if you have any feedback to give us, go ahead and let us know, message in the comments below, or Elias, where can they send their feedback?
You can send your feedback to @LucasStarks on Twitter. That is Alex Rosenberg's Twitter. He loves to hear your podcast feedback about podcasts he was barely involved with. Also, where is the real place? Because I don't know.